You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning, happy Friday. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Friday, April 4th. Nice to have you along. We've got meteorologist Brittany Merlot standing by. Also coming up this hour, our Week in Review panel, slightly modified. We will have journalist Jennifer Schulze. We will have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. And pinch hitting for Mark Jacob will be Mark Pocan, the congressman from Wisconsin, will be joining us to talk about news of the past week. But one last time, let's cue up that tic-tac-toe music and bring you Civic Media's Break into Spring statewide text to win contest. Last chance to use that Civic Media app and go to one of the stations, use the text feature, text us the keyword I'm about to give you, and you can win this hour's prize and be entered in the grand prize drawing, a brand new queen mattress set from Verlo that includes a mattress, pillows, bamboo sheets, and more. You can get full contest rules at civicmedia.us. The hourly prizes range from a Chula Vista getaway to Milwaukee Brewers tickets to $100 cash. So let's get right to it. This hour's keyword for $100, that's this hour's prize, is cash. C-A-S-H, cash. You have until 7:59 to text it in and be eligible to win. What do I always say? Somebody's going to win $100 this hour. Why not you? So again, text in this hour's keyword, cash, to be part of the final day of the Break into Spring Text to Win contest. All right, let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot to talk a bit about the weekend forecast. Oh, look at that, Greg. After 10 days of doing this, wore Greg out. No longer dancing to the tic-tac-toe theme.
I was dancing. I was doing my thing. And then you said, you know what I always say, somebody's got to win $100. Like it's your catchphrase.
Well, that's all I've been saying for 2 weeks. It's like, hey.
I know. But let me have this, Pat. Just let me have this.
All right. Here's Brittany Merlot with the forecast. Brittany, I was saying earlier that having the sun out late yesterday was just glorious. I'm like, oh, we have finally turned the corner. I feel bad about complaining, yesterday morning about how the cold temperatures are hanging around. This is it. We're finally there. And temperatures are in the 20s again this morning. And I'm like, we have to bust out of this at some point. Just not today.
Well, we're trying to.
I know.
I see it around the corner.
Next week's looking pretty good.
Yes, it is. So hang in there, everyone. It's crisp this morning. The winds are much calmer, though. We're looking at low 20s up northeast. We've got some mid-30s, though, making its way into the Fox Valley. Appleton's at 36 degrees right now, which is the same as Racine and Kenosha. We're all waking up to beautiful, sunny, clear skies, though. And as we go through this afternoon, highs will make it to the low to mid-50s far southwest. And we're looking at low to mid-40s east and north today. The clouds will move in, though, by this afternoon. So clouds increasing, light rain rolling through south later on this afternoon and through the evening, as we have two low-pressure systems kind of meshing into the state at the same time. So we're going to see a little bit of rain moving into the southern part first. Then we're going to see a little bit of scattered showers up north as a cold front sweeps through. And that front is going to end all of the rain through the overnight hours. So that means tomorrow we have dry conditions, a ton of sunshine out there. We'll be in the upper 30s north to upper 40s south. And then Sunday, the sunshine continues. So a gorgeous, beautiful weekend. And we get a little bit warmer for Sunday too. Low 40s north to low 50s south. But at night, Sunday, a cold front moves through, could spark up some light snow for Monday morning. And I'm going to tell you now, Monday's going to be cold. We're talking about highs in the 30s statewide. So even you down south, upper 30s.
I feel like somebody's talking to me personally, warning me not to be triggered on Monday morning when it's cold and maybe snowy again. I'll be fine.
You got this.
I'll accept it. I got this. like there's serious doubt going on around the station right now. Nope, he's going to whine again.
Everything's so quiet. Yeah. Pat seems really mad right now.
No, I'm fine. It's after just the that, it's the way of my people. But then, yes.
Then we get some 60s and maybe even some 70s.
There we go. See, there. Yeah. There. Thank you. Thank you. Let's see. Let me check over on the text line where, oh my goodness, folks, you're busy. You're busy here today. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. Sunshine, 25 degrees. Yesterday, I went and got a haircut from my friend Anita. I plow snow for her, and she gave me a bonus in a $25 gas card. That's some good friendship right there. He loves the episode of the Beverly Hillbillies where Granny predicts the weather using a beetle in a matchbox and leaves curling on the trees. And I think of Brittany whenever I see that episode.
I love that episode.
Oh, you know this episode. Okay.
Yes, the little box and the beetle. I've got a box too. Yep.
I just have a question for Rob. When you see your friend, do you walk up to her? And because I would do this. I would go, I need a haircut.
Okay. Anyway, Rob goes on to say that next week is Severe Weather Awareness Week. He can't wait to take a storm spotter class. Brittany's going to help me, and I'm going to become a storm spotter. I've been doing it since 2022. I got into reporting storm damage and rain and snow amounts in the Tigerton area. Let's see. He also says the song you played by Starship. I heard that before my appendix operation on September 20th, 1987.
Wow.
From Tony up in Ashland. Brittany, all your snow melted and flowed right into my basement. No. My drain pipe was frozen, so it had nowhere else to go. On the positive side, I now know exactly where the drain pipe is supposed to drain to.
Oh, so, boy.
There you go. And, from Shizu, sounds like great weather, a beautiful day to honor my papa at his funeral. Uh-huh. Oh, well, that's bittersweet, but yes, I hope the memories are happy that you recount here. And Brittany, thank you so much for the forecast, and if I don't do it enough, thank you for your patience.
Thank you. You guys are the best.
You are wonderful. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Let's talk a little sports at 7:13 here, because the Milwaukee Brewers helped the Cincinnati Reds to make some history yesterday. Not exactly the good kind. The Brewers opened up a four-game series hosting the Reds. Nestor Cortez, remember him from last week? Gave up a home run on the first pitch of the game. Gave up a home run on the second pitch of the game. Gave up a home run on the third pitch of the game to the Yankees. Much better this time. Allowed just one hit over six innings and helped the Brewers beat the Reds 1-0 yesterday. For the Reds, it was the third game in a row that they'd lost 1-0. That hasn't happened since 1960, and you have to go to the 19-aughts for the last time that it happened before then. The game two of the series at American Family Field is at 7:05, so coverage will begin at 6:35 on several Civic Media stations, including WCQM up in Park Falls and our newest Brewers affiliate, WBZH, in Hayward. Head over to the website to learn more. A little history made for the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis became the first player in NBA history to have 35 points, 17 rebounds, and 20 assists as the Bucks beat the Philadelphia 76ers 126-113 last night. The Bucks are on a three-game road trip. The second game will be tomorrow in Miami. Then they will be in New Orleans on Sunday. Their next home game is against the Minnesota Timberwolves on Tuesday. In the news, there was an election yesterday, an internal election for the members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, where they elected a new Chief Justice and have decided that the new Chief Justice will be the one who's going to be retiring shortly, Ann Walsh Bradley, who's also one of the longest tenured justices on the court. So she will serve as Chief Justice for about 2 months, and then Justice Jill Karofsky will succeed her for the rest of that two-year term. Now, the selection of a Chief Justice had been the subject of some controversy a few years back, and that was when there was another one of these Republican-led constitutional amendments to change the way that Chief Justices are chosen by the Supreme Court. It used to be the most senior justice was the Chief Justice. Kind of makes sense. Had that arrangement for 120 some years. But Shirley Abramson had been Chief Justice for many, many years to that point. And even when there was a conservative majority on the court, so legislators helped push through and sell voters on an amendment that said it would be the court justices who decide on the Chief Justice. And so with there being a conservative majority, they promptly dumped Shirley Abramson and put one of the conservative members in place instead. Had that rule still been in force, there is a conservative justice now, and there would continue to be a conservative justice in the future because of the seniority levels with the various justices. But because they changed the rules 10 years ago, it will now be one of the progressive justices who is Chief Justice instead. It will be Anne Walsh Bradley for a couple of months until she retires, and then Justice Jill Karofsky after that. And as I mentioned, another one of the senior conservatives on the court, Rebecca Bradley, it will be her seat that is up for re-election a year from now. Not clear yet if she is going to run for another 10-year term or not. When we have our Week in Review panel coming up in a couple of minutes here, we're going to talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about a lawsuit. I just wanted to give you the headline quickly that Democratic officials in 19 states, including Wisconsin, have filed a lawsuit against President Trump and his attempt to reshape elections across the U.S. They call it an unconstitutional invasion of states' clear authority to run their own elections. Trump's order is basically rooted in his ongoing lies about election security, saying that states have failed to enforce basic and necessary election protection. That's a lie. U.S. elections have been secure, have proven to be secure. There has not been any rigging. Trump lost in 2020 fair and square, but because he was able to convince enough voters to put him back in office in 2024, he's now not just on a rampage through the American economy, but through the American election system as well. He is threatening to withhold funding from states that do not bow to his will and make various changes to elections. But as New York Attorney General Letitia James put it, we are a democracy, not a monarchy, and this executive order is an authoritarian power grab, prompting the lawsuit that Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call is joining in on as well. So we will talk a bit to Jim Santel about that coming up. We'll be joined by Chicago veteran journalist Jennifer Schulze as well. And then coming up at 7:30, we will have Congressman Mark Pocan join the panel as well. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
From the daily history lesson, we'll miss a couple over the weekend here, so we'll tell you that over the weekend, in 1974, Billy Joel first entered the charts with Piano Man, which would come in at number 33 on the charts. It would peak at number 25 2 weeks later, and you'd say, okay, well, that song went nowhere, and now it is the song that everybody identifies with Billy Joel, and again, that was 51 years ago this weekend. That it took effect. So let's welcome in. Mark Jacob is off this week, but we've got Jennifer Schulze, we've got Jim Santel here, and we've got from Adam on YouTube. I listened to Jim Santel's Amicus, a law review for the first time last Saturday and walked away feeling so informed and much smarter. Thank Jim Santel for taking time out of your weekend to help educate us all. I can't do any better than that, Jim. Good morning.
I can't either. And Adam, if I could somehow skew the special Civic Media contest that's going on, you would be the winner this hour, next hour, and every hour.
No, we can't do that.
That's called fraud.
All we can do is tell people that this hour's keyword is cash. This hour's prize is $100. Text in the word cash for your chance to win. Jennifer, I got no fan mail here except me saying that I love your articles, and you can read our newsletter, Indistinct Chatter, over on Substack, substack.com/@newsJennifer. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Well, good. Hey, we're going to get into some of the news headlines with Jennifer in a second here, but I'm going to pick up where I left off in the last segment with Jim, and that is talking about this lawsuit against President Trump and what he is trying to mandate, what he's trying to order states to do. It's quite clear from this that he is again trying to attack mail-in voting. He wants all in-person voting, all on one day. And if you can't make it, well, tough luck for you. And Jim, I don't believe that this pesky little thing called the Constitution will necessarily allow that.
There are probably about 17 problems with what our president has done. We can highlight perhaps numbers one and two. Number one is just in terms of authority. It is fascinating to note, as we always do, the president is the one person who does not have a role to play when it comes to federal elections. The Congress plainly does. And most importantly, the states do. What does the Constitution say? The Constitution says that is the states. It's established the times, the places, the circumstances of voting. That's what James Madison wrote in our Constitution, adopted by all the states. It's been that way. And that's why, if you think about it, even again, this was not a federal election this past Tuesday, but all the elections, including last November, you don't have federal officials there. What do you have? You've got your local clerks, your local people, even some of your regional people come in to do that. That's what's at core problematic with this. This is the fourth lawsuit that's been filed, this one by attorneys general. They've all been consolidated in front of a federal district court judge in Washington. She will have, once again, hearings on all of this. This is not a difficult prediction to make. She will find that this is contrary to the Constitution. The president has no authority to do what he's claiming to do. It is illegal. And again, the problem with this, of course, is, especially in advance of last Tuesday's election, people hear this sort of thing, including that they've got to show up with their birth certificate here in Wisconsin. To the extent that that chills voting populations, that's the other concern here. You're getting bad information out there, an order that is not legal, but you're sending it out at a time when people are thinking about voting. Once again, I say, shame on you, Mr. President. And where are the lawyers around him saying, you simply can't do this? We've got a federal judge who almost certainly will say just that.
Oh, there's no lawyers around him saying you can't do it. He's busy taking down all the law firms that he's been targeting lately. But Jennifer, that's the policy. Now it's how is this being framed? How's it being presented in, you know, by news networks, by newspapers and things like that? And I haven't read enough yet to say, here we go again with the both sides-ism, but I certainly would expect that newsrooms would be rather robust in saying that President Trump put out an executive order for things that he does not have the power to do. I know. Is that, that's too much to hope for that kind of...
And you would be wrong.
Yes, I would.
We do not have an understanding of what executive orders are and are not. And we most certainly do not have any consistency in reporting those. It's the same problem, frankly. Anytime Trump says anything, more often than not, the headlines are Trump says whatever he says with nothing else, as if that is the fact.
Right.
The same is true when he issues an executive order. Trump issues executive order demanding blah, blah, blah. You very rarely will see, and the same is true this week, any headlines, even the first couple paragraphs of a story or on TV or in print, that then say, oh, by the way, he can't do this. Oh, by the way, it's illegal. Oh, by the way, no.
Not even a by the way. It would be great to see it in the headline.
Yes.
Just something like, you know, Trump proposes major changes to elections, comma, but he can't do that. I mean, it would be a fact-based headline. Before we go to break, Jennifer, and welcome in Congressman Pocan, I wanted to get your thoughts as well on, again, with the stock markets absolutely cratering, that's certainly what you're seeing on most news networks, but not all of them, right?
Right. So Fox, for the first time in its 28-year history, yesterday took off the stock market ticker that runs along the bottom of Fox News.
Of course they did.
Because it was so devastating to them. They had had it on earlier in the day. And so when they were interviewing, like, say, the head of the agriculture department, there it is with, you know, bright red going down, down, down. It's not there. I haven't checked today. I assume it's not there. Last night when I checked their website, you couldn't find a story about what happened on the stock market on the entire first page. I do see this morning on their website, there's a little story at the bottom about how China is responding this morning to the tariffs. But yes, they are not just ignoring it, they are they're following Trump completely. So their viewers are going to have to look at their bank accounts to actually find out what's going on.
And find out how it's Joe Biden's fault, apparently, because somehow it is. Let's see. Jim, I'm not going to have time for this before the break, but I'm going to read the question off anyway, and we'll see if we can tackle it later. If a woman has a valid passport with both maiden and married name on it, is that enough documentation to prove who they are when they vote? Because that is part of what this gets into is you think it's targeting, you know, undocumented immigrants, but married women or newly divorced women could have issues with some of these rules as well.
The Congressman Mark Pocan, broader. Absolutely.
Congressman Mark Pocan joins the conversation right after this. You're up north. One more from the history books before we close it up for the week. It was this week in 1968 that the number one album was the soundtrack from The Graduate, propelled largely by Mrs. Robinson there from Simon and Garfunkel. 7:35 on this Friday morning, April 4th, and we are happy to welcome to the program Congressman Mark Pocan on an adjusted schedule this week that we're going to get into. Congressman, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, and thanks to all your listeners for sending a message from Wisconsin.
Yes.
The loudest message of the week.
That was quite a message that came from Wisconsin. Folks all across the country heard it. We continue on as well with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and journalist Jennifer Schulze. But Congressman, let's start with why we were originally going to talk on Wednesday. You're here today because plans changed midweek because of something the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, wasn't happy about. Can you just explain what the kerfuffle was?
Well, it's somewhere between the Republicans are incompetent and don't know how to govern and the fact that it's a bunch of old white men who can't understand that if a woman gives birth and she's in Congress, that she should still be able to represent her constituents, something they can't quite get their head around. So really, it was just kind of the worst of Republicans in general, and it sent us all home.
And it was all about proxy voting, and which, by the way, that was done during COVID, right? There were times when you all got to vote by proxy?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's very easy to argue that if you're a female member of Congress who's going to have a baby, that you could still represent your constituents and take care of your baby. Like, you know, we have many federal programs to try to help people do. And the idea that Republicans can't get their head around that. I mean, what it really is they think there's more Democratic women than men. Therefore, it benefits Democrats rather than it benefits people. And you maybe want more women in your caucus anyway, Mike. Might not be a bad idea. and he has a member who just said she's going to be giving birth in September. Like, you know, it's just I'm tired of old white dudes making all the decisions for a country that is more than just old white dudes.
And what you had was, I forget the number now, 7 or 8 Republicans who actually crossed over and voted on a procedural motion that would have allowed a vote on this, allowing proxy voting. And the Speaker, rather than allowing it to go forward, just stopped all business for the week and sent everybody home, which I don't know how he thinks that that gets resolved. But Jennifer, not to pick on you, but as the woman on the panel today, I'm sure you're hearing this and thinking, yeah, what else is new of all the stories we've had to cover about workplaces and women in the workplaces? And we still, honest to goodness, have members of the Wisconsin legislature who, when we talk about the child care crisis, their answer is, well, maybe if more of these moms would just stay home.
Well, right. I mean, it's no surprise to any of us here and your listeners as well that Republicans aren't, I mean, they don't like women, period. And, you know, any of this stuff that might actually help anybody. But I think, and I'd be curious what the congressman thinks about this. It also strikes me that this is particularly linked to Republicans saying no to anything that happened during COVID. I mean, they made a big stink about it during COVID that they didn't want remote voting, and somehow that was, you know, untoward. And it seems like everything that Democrats did during COVID, Republicans have seemed like they have an obligation to say no to it. And this was one of those things. So I wonder if there's an add-on to that.
I think at some level, Jennifer, you're right. The problem is they're also conflating getting COVID and having a baby. I get they don't like science, but, you know, maybe there's a first grader who could explain something to them that between the difference.
Quite possibly.
And Congressman, to your good point about what your brother is doing, the deputy chief judge in Milwaukee County has for years now, we've had trials remotely conducted. We do this all the time. Another branch of government is living in 2025, and it works, and it's effective, and justice is done. Different branch of government, but again, a good signal to what our speakers should be thinking about.
That's right. Congressman Mark Pocan is here along with Jennifer Schulze and Jim Santel as we do our little week in review here on this Friday morning. Congressman, you started off by talking about the message that Wisconsin sent to the nation. You were in Washington, D.C. Earlier this week and for Election Day. You've since then have seen that Elon Musk apparently isn't going to hang around the White House for much longer. How much credit goes to the Wisconsin voter for possibly slowing, certainly not halting, but possibly slowing what Elon Musk and Donald Trump are doing to the economy and to Wisconsin as a result?
Well, first, I mean, this putting him in the shadows doesn't get rid of Elon Musk, right? He still bought a president at $277 million, and he's not going to be going away. This tax break is the holy grail for Republicans because of people like Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So I'm not going to let a little misdirection necessarily fool me, but I do think that the message sent was much bigger than just Elon Musk. I mean, clearly people don't like him. You know, he is out of central casting. If he just walked around with his pinky in his mouth all the time, like we would complete the image, right? But the problem is, what they don't realize was the turnout we had. I mean, to me, that was the biggest message. We were close to midterm congressional level turnout for an April nonpartisan primary because people wanted to be heard speaking out against the Trump-Musk agenda. And, you know, to me, that's the real story, not just that Elon Musk's money got wasted. I'm sure he's wasted it before on things. But it's the fact that he and Trump's agenda is so toxic and the Republicans won't listen to their constituents via town halls that, you know, people came out in droves to send a message, and they did. And I think, you know, that should be the message. If I was a Republican in a district where I won by less than 10 points, because that's what we saw with these big shifts in Florida, too, I would either be figuring out how to, one, listen to my constituents, or two, get a discount card for Costco to buy Depends in bulk.
well, that takes me to my next topic. Speaking of Depends, Cory Booker giving a marathon speech on the Senate floor. Congressman, we'll start with you, and then Jennifer, I want to talk to you about your column this week about, again, just daily messaging about what's going on. Congressman, honest question to you: Cory Booker making a 25-hour speech is being weighed anywhere from a major morale booster call to action to, you know, useless performance art. I don't know where you are on that scale, so tell me your thoughts on Senator Booker's performance.
First of all, that transition was masterful, Pat.
Thank you very much. You know,
I just got to give you a major props on that. But so I'm actually a big fan of what Cory Booker did. And I think, you know, what the message that came out of the CR fight wasn't so much on the substance, because if you had a jury of 12 progressives looking at what House Dems did versus what Chuck Schumer, it'd probably be a 9-3 vote against Chuck Schumer. But he had a few points. The problem was stylistically, it was a complete zero, right? People want to see a fight right now because people are pissed. They're nervous. They're worried. I'm pissed. I'm worried. I'm nervous, right? They want to see that we have the same level of reaction. And that's where Chuck Schumer failed. So having Cory Booker do something different outside the box on behalf of Senate Democrats was extremely valuable and hopefully inspires other Democratic senators to also show they can take on some leadership in what the people are asking for and make sure that we're all rising to the moment. So in the House, a lot of Democrats are doing these town halls in Republican districts to show we're taking the fight to another level. I think what Cory Booker did was the same in the Senate, and it should be well received.
From a media standpoint then, Jennifer, your column on Substack this week, it's mostly aimed at Rachel Maddow and urging that she return to 5 nights a week on MSNBC. But you note the need for a fact-based counter-narrative to Donald Trump. And we've talked about that from a Democratic Party standpoint with party leaders, elected officials. Congressman Pocana's masterful at putting out occasional videos that sum up the week's headlines. But in terms of what journalists and advocacy journalists like Rachel Maddow should be doing, you're saying there's definitely room to step up the game.
Well, she is the most watched advocacy journalist in the country. And she committed to be back on the air 5 nights a week for the first 100 days of Trump. And I think her show has become a unique place. The audience has grown substantially since she came back on the air. And if you don't have cable, you can catch her clips on YouTube or on social media. So, you know, there isn't the paywall consideration there necessarily. But she is the consistent nightly place where you can go to make sense of what Trump is and isn't doing and how it impacts you. And I think most importantly, what people are doing around the country. There really is, because of this bifurcated media environment that we live in, it's really hard to get a sense of what's going on, even in your own neighborhood, right? But she regularly pulls together all the protests, all the activities from around the country. She features local news, which of course I'm a big fan of, and I think sends a powerful message to the country, but I also think she's a rallying point. And I feel like we just need more of that. We need places where the country can come together for fact-based information that isn't dancing around all this both sides nonsense with Trump. And I think she's it. And I hope that she will stay beyond the 100 days. I doubt that she will. And I think that would be unfortunate. So that's why I wrote that piece. You know, Trump dominates the media. There's no question about that. Breaking through that is really impossible, but she succeeds at that. Nobody else really does.
I'm going to now try to make a transition to something more in Jim's wheelhouse, which won't be as masterful as that last transition. But I do wonder, Jim, if there was, from the beginning, much more of a daily counter-narrative, if there was much more organized resistance, if you will, if maybe we would not be seeing some of these big law firms caving the way that they have to Trump's, you know, various demands. It is an attack on the judicial system itself, on judicial independence. And I just want to know, as you see these big law firms agree to things that Trump is demanding of them, frankly, how it makes you feel.
Right. We've talked about this before. It's terrible, right? It's capitulation of the highest order. There is a bit of a good news story about that, which is also covered by you and others, which is that you do have some law firms that are taking him on. And again, in the focus of what federal judges are doing right now is the guardrails against these 100 executive orders. You've got federal judges, including Beryl Howell, right there where the congressman spends a lot of his time in Washington, D.C. She is saying, no, you cannot do this. And she is stopping the execution of those orders by the General Services Administration to permit lawyers to go into courts. And so that issue, again, why it is, number one, that these executive orders are, yes, somewhat successful. You do have some New York firms saying, yes, we'll capitulate to this, but others also taking them on. And why is this important? With due respect to my own profession, lawyers, again, are also guardrails. Judges are guardrails. And the lawyers are the ones who are advocates in court. You get rid of the lawyers, as we have talked about before, the Shakespeare quote from Henry VI, Part II, and the institutions begin to fall. That's the other piece. That's the other educational piece that Jennifer talks about, that Rachel Maddow is talking about when it comes to why those things with respect to law firms are so, so destructive.
Congressman, let me wrap things up with you in noting that a day or two ago, there were a handful of Senate Republicans that voted with Democrats on a resolution that would take away the president's power in terms of all of these tariffs. I'm sure you're going to say it's not going to go anywhere in the House, but is there significance that you're starting to see some Republicans not standing shoulder to shoulder with Trump all the way on his trade wars?
You know, it's a scratch at this point. That's about all I can say. But I think what we were just talking about in the lawsuits, you know, that is really significant to mention. There's over 150 lawsuits against what Donald Trump and Elon Musk are doing right now. We've had positive adjudications in over 50 of them. So when people ask, what can we do? And they're nervous, and rightfully so nervous. It's litigation and communication, you know, support the groups that are doing litigation. And there's litigation trackers out there. You can search Trump litigation tracker and find them. But those are the very places we're having the real substantive victories. It's not in Congress because we don't have a majority right now. It is in the legal system. Even Trump appointed judges have ruled against him. So we do have a firewall.
Yeah, as long as we keep all this out of Eileen Cannon's court, we're fine. From the text line from Tom in Hartford about this resistance and pushback, yes, we need a lot more of that. And then in all capital letters, a lot more, which is no doubt inspired in part by conversations like these. Congressman Mark Pocan and Jennifer Schulze and Jim Santel, thank you so much, all of you. I really appreciate wrapping up the week with you guys. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Thank you. Right. Take care.
All right. When we come back, Dan Schumacher will be here. We'll talk a little sports to wrap things up on Up North News Radio for this Friday morning. After this, on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, let's land the plane, or let's bring the truck home, as the case may be, as we welcome in Dan Schumacher. And Greg, you went real classic with your Grateful Dead this week.
I went the ultimate cut, I think. You know, people will say Touch of Grey is the most recognizable, but I think when it's you're talking about the Dead, it's trucking. And yes. I haven't heard this song in like
it's like
years.
Comfort food. Yes.
It's from the album Working Man's Dead.
Heck yeah.
Probably their most popular 70s album, Working Man's Dead, was that classic bringing in the rock and roll, the blues, and the country.
Yes.
An album.
That's probably my favorite studio album from them because of that country influence.
Yeah.
So let's do a little sports here. Your Cubs have their home opener today, I hear.
Yes, they do at 1:20.
All right. Going up against San Diego and in the National League Central Division, the Cubs are in second place, a half a game behind the Cardinals. And then the Brewers are in third place with 3 wins, 4 losses. But, you know, that's 3 wins that we weren't expecting after that series at Yankee Stadium. That was...
That was a football score. The one that was a football score.
Not good. It was not good, but... Again, you're going to get it out of the way. You're going to get it out of the way early. The Brewers continue their series against the Cincinnati Reds. Game 2 of the series. Coverage starts at 6:35 on several Civic Media stations. They beat the Reds last night 1-0 with Nestor Cortes bouncing back from that dreadful start in Yankee Stadium last week.
So hey, that game that 2 days ago where it went into over went into like 12 innings.
12 innings, yep, and the perfect bunt. Yeah.
I was so mad that they pulled
Peralta, yeah, after 8 innings.
I thought he was dealing, leave him alone.
But that's not the Brewer's way.
Yeah. I'm like, is it Craig Counsell back?
I know, that's a Craig Counsell move, right?
No, Craig would have pulled him in the mid first inning. But yeah. So
I thought it was a great call. I sat there and I'm looking and watching, and I'm with a group of other gentlemen, and the two of us, two guys, were me, myself, and another guy arguing about, okay, they were at first and third. What do you do? Do you send the runner to second to force a throw, or do you bunt? And what do? They bunted.
Bryce Durang. Yep, put one down that every little leaguer should be watching. I mean, that's exactly how you do it. So it is nice to have baseball back. It was a rough start in the beginning. Yep. Right. For the Cubs too. You had those two losses in Tokyo. And so you got to get those things out of the way. Now you can truly enjoy the season. Now, we were hearing from Tony up in Ashland there about the runoff, the melt-off, and a lot of it sadly running into his basement, I think is what he said. So you can confirm that, because we had snow here in Chippewa for a little bit, for a day or so, and then it melted off. But you've got a big melt-off.
Yeah, I do. I mean, there's water everywhere. Water is everywhere, like... You know, you can't even wear gym shoes outside right now, you know, even to walk the pavement because there's standing water. It's just.
So we've talked about that with, you know, your baseball teams, your softball teams, where sometimes you'll play a triple header just to get some of the games in.
That is correct. Or you got to go south. So my baseball team here, because of this, we were supposed to play at the University of Minnesota Morris. But they have snow and they have their melt off and their field is soup. So the games are going to now get moved to Mauston, Wisconsin, because they have an artificial turf stadium down there for baseball.
Oh,
okay.
So we rent that one. Just like River Falls gets rented out, Wisconsin Lutheran, you've got a handful of Division III schools that have artificial turf baseball fields. So teams are renting them out because you got to get the games in.
Yeah. Hey, Final Four this weekend. I know it was all four of the number one seeds. I don't have them in front of me. I do know that I'm still like tied for first place in our bracket challenge.
Oh, nice.
You're at Courier Newsroom.
Wow.
Which of course is completely a blind squirrel finding an acorn.
Right.
But we're not surprised about that. Everybody said this was, if ever there was a year four number one seeds were going to be in the Final Four, this was it. But do you have a prediction on how this is going to go?
Of course, because of my job, I'm not allowed to gamble or fill out a bracket.
Correct. Yep, we've said that. Yep.
But from a picking standpoint, just for general prognosticating, I'm gonna take Florida versus Duke for the national championship.
Florida versus Duke. Okay. And
I'm gonna take Florida to win it.
Okay. See that? Now I did again. I don't know why. What I did. I chose Florida to win it all.
I don't know why.
So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to ride my lucky guesses for as long as I possibly can. And that's just fine with me.
Okay, I'm going to say this right now. If you win, Pat, if this is the thing, like you win the bracket, if this is ever brought up again, I'm be like, there were all lucky guesses, Pat. You are not a shaman of sports.
No, not even a little bit. No. Sometimes
you'll rather be lucky than good.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
There it is.
we will take that and we will just ride with it. And then for congrats to the River Falls women, D3 national hockey champions 2 years in a row. The D1 men, they take a week off. Their Final Four, the Frozen Four, is next week in St. Louis. And
are you
that
going,
one, Pat? I am not going, but I will be there in spirit for the Western Michigan Broncos. Right. Interestingly enough, my daughter and son-in-law want to take the kids. The kids are 3 and 6, and so they're going to get to go watch the national championship down there. And I hope it's a great time because they are to watch a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old cheering at a hockey game. And I've seen a lot of Snapchat videos of them at the hockey games. They are fully in. They know the team. They know the cheers. And it's just going to be fun to watch them. So I'm hoping it's very successful next week.
That's
for them.
That's great, man. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Dan Schumacher from Northland College up in Ashland. Thank you so much. Have a good
6 more weeks I will be.
Yeah, well, see, that you hold that. We got that.
They announced it. It's May 24th through the 31st will be a succession of days as the institution closes down.
And then it'll say Dan Schumacher, free agent. So,
yes,
all right, buddy, I will talk to you.
I am for hire right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Keep that in mind. Send your notes in. Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. I'll be back Monday morning at 6 a.m. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday here up north.
The national news cycle never stops.
but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.